The Fable and Folly Network supports creators of exceptional audio stories, including the one you're listening to right now. If you love our shows, we want to hear from you. Complete our listener survey at fableandfolly.com/survey. This will help us learn more about you, what you like, what you'd like to hear more of, and how we can maintain an inclusive, safe atmosphere. As a thank you for your participation, we have extras and behind-the-scenes content from your favorite shows. Fans make the network what it is. Thanks for listening, and we can't wait to hear from you. Find our listener survey at fableandfolly.com/survey today.
Welcome back, my kindred, to Blood and Syrup, a Vampire the Masquerade live play podcast. I am Sylvania Dracul, your host through this world of darkness. The Coterie remain separated, fighting their own battles. Evangeline salvaged the snake's husk and came across a dying Verstella. She and Val were lost as to where Doris and Everett were. And Everett, about to die and being very, very hungry, decided to feed on one of his captors. Will satisfying the beast be enough to save him when he plummets to the ground? Abandon hope, all ye who listen here.
Everett, you are falling from a helicopter. Your teeth are sunk deep into Agent Lawrence's throat as you begin to just drain as much of her essence as you can. I feel like this isn't like a diabolery situation where you're trying to like swallow her soul. You're literally just real fucking hungry and you got a juice box for the road.
A last meal before your execution.
Yeah, understood. All right. On your sheet there, sir, can you tell me what your Bane potency is?
My Bane potency. I might not have that because I've only got the one half of the sheet.
That is okay.
I'm so sorry.
No, that's all good, man.
It's on the other side, and I don't.
Yeah, it's all good. I'm pretty sure it's two. So that is just fine.
Write that down.
That Bane severity, is that what it's called?
Yes, sorry, severity. Yes. You've got the right of it.
Is this lady not a vampire? Is this lady not a vampire?
Oh, she is. Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Cool. All right. So you are plummeting. As you fall through the sky, you can see. This all happens very fast. I feel like movies have really taught us that you can like fall out of things for a really, really long time, and it's just like totally a thing that happens. It's a short ride from helicopter to ground. You can see several other choppers flying kind of not quite in formation, but as the one you fell out of bursts into flame and spirals kind of out of the sky in a swirling fireball. But these are all just glimpses of things you get as you plummet towards the trees below you. I guess my question is, you're draining Laurent for as much juice as you can get. Do you think there's anything else on your mind? Like, would you try, God help me, would you pull an Adam McNamara and try and brace? Are you, like, what is, or is it just like, here's what's in front of me, this is the end?
Not everything, but a significant amount of what has happened over the past few hours has been the result of, like, the beast taking the wheel and I'm making bad choices. And Everett was convinced he was going to die. And so he just kind of relaxed and the beast lunged forward and he started to feed. So I don't think he's thinking about much of anything. I would imagine plummeting from a helicopter to the, it's a forest or like woods that we're over, is that right?
Yeah, like think low, like in sort of the foothills leading up to the mountains in Alberta, like it gets really foresty kind of the further in you get, but you're kind of on the outskirts where the forest is just sort of starting. So yeah, sort of think like large pines, that sort of thing. Definitely not kind of like big flat terrain.
No.
Like a forested area. And already on an incline. Like you guys were well into the foothills. So, you know, it's getting greener and more steep.
So that's already pretty disorienting. I doubt there's in those kinds of scenarios, what can you like think of? I think he was like, I'm going to die. I'm so hungry. I can't stand it. I'm getting this before I go. And so he's, I think probably if any choice is really being made, it's to just relish in these last few moments.
Okay. Amazing. Yeah. So, with that in mind, you fall to Earth. So let's see how this all goes, shall we? I'm going to need from you, please, sir, I think we're going with stamina and survival. Because there's not not much else going on here. This is really just a how does your body fare as you plummet?
Two fails. That's my total. No successes.
Okay. Amazing. So you hear a sickening snap, and you're not sure whether it's you or the tree that you've hit. But you crash full body, you and Laurent, kind of in a spinning ball into the tops of these trees, and you begin to just ricochet off things. It's not like an action hero jumping out of a thing and needing to survive so they land safely in a tree kind of situation. It's a getting beaten by giant wooden bats that happen to be planted in the earth and providing oxygen to us kind of situation. So you're going to take 3 points of... two of your superficial damage will become aggravated. And your one remaining point of health is going to be superficial just from the trees and kind of the general impact. This is all offset. I've offset the damage here because you're in one of those weird situations where it's like you're drinking a healing potion while being stabbed. So
I was wondering if
also the ragdoll effect has to play a part, right?
100%. And that's part of the reason I wanted to ask about like what you were trying to do, because I feel like if you tried to brace, this would hurt so much more. Yeah. But given that you're only focused on feeding, I think it really is like a drunk person in a car crash where it's just like you ragdoll. It's full like, you know, PS2 ragdoll physics. Seeing a lot of that in Halo lately, which is very funny. Yeah. Dead serious online game, and everyone's like, "Wee!"
Doing a cartwheel through the air. Yeah.
Yeah. Basically, as soon as you hit the trees, you and Laurent are separated because you just fucking plow into them. She goes spiraling off, bouncing off trees. You're also bouncing off trees.
And anything else get separated, or are we good?
you're still crashing through them. So I'm going to need another check from you, sir. This time, let's go with strength and survival.
It's the same. It's two dice.
I'll make dice. The rules, baby. I just enforce them.
One success on that.
Great. You continue to crash through. You're in absolute agony. Like, I think you've probably blacked out at this point. You're not in torpor, but like you're out.
It's daytime too, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We're getting to that. You're again, you continue to hear things snap. You're pretty sure you see your arms swing in front of you in a way that arms are not really meant to swing. You have absolute agony in your legs, but basically your whole body is just a ball of pain as you plummet through the trees to the ground. You hit with a I'd like to say like a dramatic, like, you know, you land in some kind of cool pose, but
yeah,
it's Iron Man
drop. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You Black Widow it down. But it's more of kind of a spiraling, tumbling mess, as your dislocated and broken limbs, flail, in front of you. Unfortunately you did take your helmet off in order to feed. The last of your consciousness slips away, you see something that, again, you kind of thought you wouldn't really get to see again, which is the skin on your face begins to peel and blister, you look at the beautiful sight of the sun, something that, you know, growing up down south, you often saw thought never to see again. As your body kind of gives up on you, you stare at just the rays of sun coming through the trees. It's beautiful, it's painful, and then you're gone. Meanwhile, back at the hospital, Val and Evangeline, you have managed to get medical help for Stella. Evangeline, you have the snake that was used to poison her, or a similar snake, as we've established, in a Ziploc. But that's as far as we got. So the alarms are going. Medical professionals are you know, smashing in ER style. And they immediately grab Stella. And you can tell that, that there's like a real extra layer of panic here, because this is very much like it's one of our own. So, and from Val, what you saw during your messy, successy rampage through the wall, there's a sense that I think neither of you have necessarily, I mean, Evangeline, I think of the two of you, you would have picked up on it, but you're only now really getting a taste of like how fucking scared a lot of the humans in this town are. It's very easy to forget and to just kind of be like, no, everyone's here by choice. Everyone's cool with it.
I mean, but, I've been dealing with my own fear.
Yeah. So I think Evangeline, then this would be fine for you, but Val, for you, just like realizing that particularly as the law and with the previous sheriff, like it was a lot of like, hey, yeah, no, we're good. Like, of course, whatever you need. And only now are you really seeing like the panic as they drag Stella up onto the gurney, or onto the stretcher rather. And also just the futility of a lot of these, kind mortal, doctors trying to sort out magical bullshit that isn't really a thing. Also, this town, as we've established, is fucking very new. So it's not like they've had years and years and years of experience with the masquerade and everything else to sort this. They are literally just like, hey, you know those things we learned about 2 months ago that were real? Shit, let's deal with that. So as we established, Stella's in bad shape. Her eyes are fully shot through with red. There's foam at her mouth. The foam is pink, so clearly there's blood in her lungs. She's in a hell of a state. They immediately sort of like start rushing her to one of the operating rooms. Would you follow, or are you going to try and investigate the sheriff's disappearance?
Val would not follow. Val would want to. Val's priorities are to investigate what's going on, eat something. She's angry and hungry. Probably try to contact her son and or the police department to find out what's going on, all while it is daytime and she's angry and tired. So there's a lot of things. But the rest of the humans is really the least of her priorities, and she's most used to interacting with humans when they are scared. And everyone has basically been scared of her, so this is not anything new for Val. She's just, all the humans are scared of me and are... That's how it is.
Gotcha. So Evangeline, I guess this is really more a question for you, because you did show a lot of concern for Stella when you found her. Where do you think you would go?
I mean, the thing is, I tried to give the doctor the snake, right?
And he just wasn't there yet. Now that he's there, you can give him the snake. You just push the button. They were like, I throw the snake at them. And it's like, no one's here yet, because Val is tying them up in the lobby.
Right,
but now,
right.
Now there are medical staff on site, because Val got over her need punch justice.
Then I think it's kind of like, I think it's just like, it's too much overwhelm with all of like the people's like high emotions. For Evangeline, like, she's just not going to feel it with them at this point. It's just too goddamn much in the past 24 hours. So it's literally like takes the snake out of her pocket and like, and honestly kind of like dead eye, just like hands it to the doctor.
Great. Okay. So with that in mind, then Evangeline, if you're kind of throwing in the towel, do you think you would just go find a dark place to like fucking snooze for a bit? Because being awake right now is agony for both of you. Like, it's you know, it's just a normal day dealing with 2021 or 2022, just an exhausting huge weighty burden. If you want to do any additional stuff, you're gonna have to roll some pretty hearty dice, because being awake right now is...
I don't want to do anything else. Mean, I want my dog, but I can't go outside right now. Evangeline just starts like going down the hall, opening doors until she finds either an empty room or like a janitor's closet, just somewhere where she won't be disturbed, where she can just basically sit down and pass out.
Yeah, the good news is because DeSanti is Kindred himself, he makes sure that like all the hospitals that DeSanti Corp build are like, they're what would normally be a terrible, like badly designed thing where there's like all of the rooms have no windows that are in the interior of the building. But he's purpose-built it for that. So yes, it's very easy to find a room with no windows. I think a way to think about the layout of this hospital is for the mortals that stay here, that kind of the outer ring of the hospital absolutely has rooms with windows. But there's a big core in the center, which is normally where like the operating room and other things would be, that are just like a weird like pod of rooms without windows. You weren't in one of those before because there were so many of you that they had to just kind of put you in a recovery room with windows and blinds. But yeah, you're able to find an individual room to just kind of like shuffle into and ease the door shut. I think like there's something kind of beautifully cinematic and kind of sad about just like shoving the snake into the hand and just like watching you kind of like an old man angry at people on his lawn, just like slowly close the door.
It's like close the door behind me and then just kind of in like one smooth motion, just like drop to my knees, roll onto my side and just lay down.
Yeah, it's just a Michael Cera and Arrested Development.
That's exactly what it is. God.
Amazing. All right,
but less funny.
Great.
More sad.
Yeah, more sad. Absolutely. Cool. And then Val, in your case, would you be looking to... I know you want to grab some food on the way out, but would you likely be doing the same?
I think, Val would be grabbing food and... while eating food, attempt to make a call to the police department to say what's been going on. And then wherever she happens to pass out after that, that's just going to be the place. If it's in the middle of the hallway, fine. This is what we have to do.
Okay. Amazing. So, you can update the police department. It's still chaos there because they're dealing with the fallout of the town hall massacre. They're in a bit of a panic because the town council is missing. No one is responding to anything. They seem to just be gone, which is not great. But they've locked down the crime scene. They are a little concerned to hear that the sheriff is missing, particularly in light of everything that just happened. They inform you that there's been an incident at the police station in that Val's husband has been there for about a day and refuses to leave.
Evangeline's husband?
Sorry, Evangeline's husband, yes.
Yeah, I was going to say, what?
Val's husband?
Dropping a fucking grenade into the
Val's
into the
husband is still in the shop. His name is Cherry, and he's dope.
That is true. That is accurate.
Yeah, we went on that whole little, like, down memory lane adventure just to have it turn around and be like, and then she also has a husband. And she also has a cool lady she was in love with in the 80s. And, yeah, there's a whole
not
rich
this
backstory.
Way, Tom, no.
The tie-in novel. Yeah, can you imagine just start prescribing relationships? I'm like, yeah, Doris's two kids show up. They are just animals. They're obviously just animals.
Yeah. I was going to say that Doris's kids would be named things like desk and lamp.
Oh, hello. I didn't see you there. It's me, Tyler Hewitt. I normally play Everett Fry, but today I'm playing the role of guy who will talk to you about Patreon. That's right. Dum Dums and Dice has a Patreon. If you go to patreon.com/dumdumdice, you can support us at a number of different levels. For example, for $25 a month, you get your name added in the special thank yous at the end of every episode. And you get to create an NPC of your own that will join the cast of Dum Dums and Dragons, or Blood and Syrup, or the Valentine Heresy in their adventures. You don't have to be bitten by a vampire to be immortalized, okay? It can be so much simpler. patreon.com/dumdumdice. DUMBDUMBDICE. Okay? Memorize it, type it, click it. The clicking part is subscribing. All right. You got this.
In any case, yes, my apologies. Evangeline's husband has been refusing to leave the station until he finds out about her whereabouts because, of course, Evangeline has been missing for several days. He is camped out there. But Val, I don't think you give a single fuck about that. That doesn't seem relevant or important to you.
I think even if Val talks to people, they probably whoever it is trying to tell her things, she just say, sheriff is missing. Hospital's been attacked. Figure it the fuck out. And then hangs up.
Amazing. And with that, you know, like back in the good old days of raging a bit too hard at a club, you just find a convenient corner to to slump into, clutching your bag of blood. You know, you... You only briefly think of how, you know, back in the day, Destiny used to make fun of you for doing this regularly. But, that part of you is long dead. So clutching your bag of blood and your phone, you sink down into a corner. Meanwhile, someone else is also dealing with a hell of a being awake time. Doris, you've arrived at the Curiosity Shop. With the assistance of Tors Valak, the wig maker to Cleopatra. This was the safe space you could think of in town. Tors has said he wants to get you out of town altogether. That may or may not happen, kind of depends. Similarly, like, you've been around a long time. So I think you're aware, and having been on the run from the pyramid for so long, you're aware of what being awake right now feels like. This isn't the first time I think you've had to make a daring daytime escape, no. As evidenced by your convenient hat for just such an occasion. It's the key here, I think, is to kind of get inside and get safe. How do you approach the shop? Again, Tors kind of doesn't have much in the van by way of like stuff to help you, but he just sort of turns over the around and says, "Doris, we have arrived here at your the shop you indicated, with the peculiarities and such. How do you want to?" And he kind of like leans forward, and the sun is blindingly bright, like it's a beautiful fucking day, which is terrible for all involved. And he just kind of turns back around, vaguely sheepishly, and says, "Do you require my shirt?"
I think my hat will suffice, Tors, but that's very kind of you.
Good, well, let it never be said that Tors Valak wouldn't give you the shirt off his back. Okay, let's go.
Do people say that?
I hope so. Then just, like, opens the door. So you're just going to make a run for it. Claire, I misunderstood the rules on this last time. So we're going to do it correctly this time, which is it's actually a humanity check in order to see how well you do against the sun here. Okay. So what is your humanity currently at?
8.
Holy shit. Okay.
Is that good? I can't remember.
I feel like that's a lot of humanity.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm gonna go ahead and say let's roll eight bones, you don't need to include your let's include your hunger on this. Why not?
Yeah. Okay. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. That's 6 successes. 1 on a hunger dice.
Okay, great. So you are more than capable of doing this. Because this is not a life-threatening situation anymore, you actually had to beat 5. You had to get 5 successes to pull this off. So, like, good work. You scraped by. Moving sluggishly, you pull your hat down to give yourself some cover, and you run into the shop. The shop is, as always, a bit of a delightful mess. It is Purchase Peculiarities is a I feel like you can't run a proper occult store if it isn't just like, you know, filled to the brim with random shit. You rush in, but luckily you know because you know Marjorie so well, like, you know this place pretty well. And you can actually see Marjorie is currently having an argument with a customer at the front desk. As you come in, she's just saying, no, you don't understand. You're using the cards wrong. You have to look at them. And then, you know, why am I even explaining this to you? You do not deserve these. And then she just like starts scooping up tarot cards and just stuffing them in her shirt. And she just reaches into the cache and throws like a fistful of coins and bills because Canada at the customer and says, "You do not deserve to know the future. Get out, 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 out." The 12-year-old with tears in his eyes just kind of picks up his money and rushes past you. What do you do?
I think she would watch the 12-year-old go, and then she would just kind of. She's like still holding on to the brims of her hat. And she would just kind of look at Marjorie and say, "You might want to be careful. I lost the sight in this eye from a bad tarot reading. There was a fight."
Yes, yes, that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. It's too dangerous for just anyone to use. You have to be careful with the cards. You have to think about it. You have to feel the cards.
No, I'm just saying. 12-year-olds can be dangerous given the right circumstances.
Yes, that is why you take the cards back. No cards for a 12-year-old. Take the cards back. But right. You say I should not have sold the cards in the first place.
No, I'm just saying be careful when you're arguing with them.
Oh.
And then she reaches under the counter and pulls out a gun and puts it on the top. She says,
"Yes, yes, yes. This is good. This is good knowledge. Be careful with 12-year-olds.
And she just cocks it and leaves it there and says, And then suddenly seems to notice like the time. Like she has like three watches. There's like an analog watch, like a Fitbit, and a like one of those old Timex digital calculator watches. And they're all set to the same time, because of course. And she looks at all three of them, and then at you, and then at all three of them, and then outside. And she just says,
Wait, Helios is in the sky. Why are you here? Should you not be sleeping?"
"I would very much like to be sleeping. Unfortunately, there's been men with guns who are trying to help me out. And by help me out, I mean kill me."
At which point, Tors comes in behind you, dingling like the... She's got wind chimes as the doorbell. And not like a proper doorbell, like literally just like big honking wind chimes, like someone having a cottage. It means the door never really closes, but like it's a whole nightmare. Anyway, so there's like a cacophony of bullshit as Taurus comes in, and she just grabs the gun and like drops into one of those weird like double fist aiming stances, like Frances McDormand does in Fargo. She's just like, "Is this one of the men?"
No. This is a friend, Marjorie.
Oh.
Put the device down.
And she just, like, puts the gun down seems to really take in Taurus for the first time. And you see something just kind of flit across her eyes. And immediately she, like, goes to readjust, like, the just, like, tornado of hair above her. And she says,
oh, good. It would be, yes, it would be a shame to shoot such a handsome gentleman."
Tors is so confused. He's got his hands up and it just looks like absolutely terrified. And then he kind of looks to you, Doris, for some confirmation that this is okay.
Yeah, she'll just look at him and say, "Tors, are you looking for some crystals?"
"If it means that the woman here with the beautiful hair puts down the gun, then I'll buy as many crystals as are needed."
No, she can put down the gun. I just wanted to know why you're here.
And he's just like so vexed. And so is Marjorie. And they both just kind of stare at you. But also both of them know you enough to, I think, know that like Doris runs on some wild tangents. And he just says,
"Doris, I wanted to make sure that you were safe. And then this woman pulled a gun on me. But I suppose I could buy crystals. Is there somewhere dark you can sleep here?"
"Oh, yes. This is my friend Marjorie."
"Marjorie."
He just kind of nods just straightens his shirt a little bit. We established he's dressed like oatmeal, so like it still looks very generic, but it's slightly nicer generic. And you realize you're standing kind of stuck in the middle of a meet cute. But also sleepy.
I don't think she would notice that.
No. Anyway, after a moment, Marjorie says,
oh, yes, we must find you somewhere to sleep. Yes, somewhere dark, somewhere away from the all-seeing eye of Helios.
Yes, and if strange men clad all in black come round, you've never seen me.
Ah!
And she'll, like, she goes to tap her nose, but she taps her cheek instead.
And Marjorie is just nodding and starts doing like a bad acting exercise with you. Something you've determined about Marjorie is like getting to actually meet World of Darkness people has really been a treat for her. You know, it's very much like a Men in Black scenario where she's like, I knew aliens were real. But it also means she spent years just kind of doing what she thought was cool occult shit. And now that it really exists, she's constantly trying to pick up the mannerisms and the ways of the kindred. So she just starts doing it like very confidently with you.
I'm a bad person to learn these rules from.
Yes.
yes.
So, she kind of waves you into the back room. So Marjorie lives above Pritchard's peculiarities, but unfortunately, you know, being a sort of like, you know, cozy downtown kind of small shop, the second floor gets a lot of light. So instead, she kind of takes you down into the basement where all of her like overstock is. And really, here's where the occult nature of Pritchard's peculiarities falls away a bit, because they're just like big cardboard boxes with things printed on them, like dream catchers that are clearly like imports from China. And like, there's just a bunch of like, it's almost like a hardware shop down there. There's just so many boxes of this stuff. And it's not to say that Marjorie doesn't believe that all of this stuff has power. She just also likes a good deal and understands that buying in bulk can really save her a fortune. But sure enough, she's able to, like she knocks over like a mass, bag of like Amazon ordered prayer rugs, just like rips it open and like throws a couple down for you. And says, is there anything I can do to make your stay more comfortable?
Do you have any jerky?
Jerky.
Oh, God, that just reminded me of the guy in the attic.
Yep.
I've forgotten about him.
She pats herself down, and she pulls out like an orange that she is only half peeled and has eaten like segments out of. And she just like looks at that and says, I could get.
Oh, no, that's okay. I was just thinking about replenishing my supplies. There's something I have to do once all of this is blown over.
Ah, yes. We've been looking into the spells for you. I've been thinking about them a lot. I've been reading many tomes, many old tomes. Yes, because you told me about the exploding spell. Yes. Exploding spell.
Yes.
I've been looking into it. I think I might have some things for you to read. Some things for you to learn.
Oh, wonderful. They deal with the spell.
Yes, with the spell.
Yes. No, the smell.
Oh, the smell.
When the explosion happens.
Yes.
Right.
And she like looks at her notes and just has all these notes on spells, and she just turns the page and takes out like she has like a fountain pen that has no cap. So, like, there's just an ink-stained pocket she pulls it out of, and she just writes smells and writes a line under. She's clearly going to do this research again. she just nods and says, yes, I will look into the smells, yes.
Wonderful. Sorry, Marjorie, just one more thing. If you see a snake.
Yes?
Well, I was just going to tell you to kill it, but I don't want you to do that. But if you could collect it for me. They've been chasing me a bit.
And she just looks at you with like wonder in her eyes, assuming this is a kindred thing. She just kind of like pulls out her phone. As she like goes towards the door, you can see she's looking up like one day Amazon delivery for like cages. And just being like, oh, too small, too much space between bars. You hear her kind of muttering like, never enough snake catching things when you need them. She closes the door behind her. Yes, Doris, you finally find yourself safe for the time being.
Great.
In a dark room, all by yourself. Is there anything you do before you go down for the day?
I think she would just like do a little ritual of making sure that the space around her was as clean and nice as possible. Checking to make sure that her arm is still attached, fixing her hair as much as she can. And then, yeah, I think no, she doesn't have any of her supplies on her, so there's no rituals to do.
Great. You know, with your arm mostly intact, and you know, Marjorie on the case of the mysterious smells, Tors, somewhere nearby, presumably, you're able to drift off into an uneasy sleep, which leaves, of course, Everett, a smoldering broken pile, deep in the woods. You're drifting in and out of consciousness as your skin burns away. Your eyes literally feel dry, which is not a great feeling. You smell something, just kind of a strong, a very sort of strong odor of wet fur. You hear kind of a snort above you as a massive lupine face looms over you, bares its teeth, and says, "Child of Lilith, we have questions for you." And then the wolf bites down onto your face.
This episode of Blood and Syrup features the voices of Tyler Hewitt at Tyler_Hewitt on Twitter, Claire Blackwood at Claire Blackwood on Twitter, Del Borvik at Deltastic on Twitter, Laurie Elizabeth at EL Hamstring on Twitter, and storyteller Tom McGee at McGeeTD on Twitter. This episode was edited and mixed by Laura Hamstra, and our show logo was created by Decapitated Markers at Decapitated Marker on Twitter. That's MRKR. Our theme songs are What's Really Going On Right Now by Chase Allen Willis and Traffic by Kai Engel, and our ads use the tracks No Control and Chiefs by Jazzar, J-A-H-Z-Z-A-R. All of their music is available at freemusicarchive.org. When it comes to Dum Dums and Dice, you can visit our website at dumdumdice.com, our Twitter and Instagram at dumdumdice, and on Facebook at facebook.com/dumdumdice. We also have merchandise available at redbubble.com/people/dumdumdice. And most importantly, you can join our Patreon at patreon.com/dumdumdice. That's DUMB DUMB DICE. Sleep well, my kindred. Sleep well in this world of darkness.
Dum Dums and Dice has to give a special thank you to the supreme beings of our Patreon at this time. The Half-Blind Prophet, Christopher Little, Sue One, George Dolby, Lord Abradovic, Orion Birchfield, Scott Garland, Benjamin V, Gavin and Abby McDonald, Cade Peters, Richard Cranium, Anna Zed, Logan, Fire Unfriendly, Acrix, Grandma Likes D&D, Alan, Austin Nut Powers Fry, Stabby Stranger, Roman Brown, and Jill and Noel LaPlante. If you want your name to be added to this list, you can join our Patreon too at patreon.com/dumdumdice. Thanks to them, and a little bit of thanks to you.
The Fable and Folly Network, where fiction producers flourish.